"But that sounds quite splendid," Temer said with real enthusiasm, when Lawrence had laid the proposal before him in only the barest terms. "I am sure we should take any number of prizes. Iskerka should have nothing on it. How long do you suppose it would be for them to build us a ship?"
Lawrence only with difficulty persuaded him to consider it as anything other than a settled thing. Temer was already inclined to be making plans for the use of his future wealth.
"You could not wish to remain here instead,"
Temer said.
"Not, of course, that I mean to suggest there is anything wrong here,"
he added unconvincingly. The mornings and late evenings were now the only and scarcely bearable times of day, and they had begun to stretch them with early rising and late nights. The sun was only just up, spilling a broad swath of light across the water running into all the bays of the harbour, making them glow out brilliantly white against the dark curve of the land rising away, blackish-green and silent. Temeraire had not eaten in 2 days. The stretch was not markedly unhealthy, given his inaction, but Lawrence feared it was due largely to a secret disdain for his food, the regrettable consequence of Temeraire's having grown nice in his tastes, a grave danger for a military man. And there Lawrence was forced again to the recollection that they were neither of them military any longer. Even so, there was an advantage to a stronger stomach. He himself, subject to shipboard provisions during the most ravenous years of his life, could subsist on weevilled biscuit and salt pork indefinitely, even though he had not often had to endure those conditions. Temeraire had too early in his life developed a finicky palate. Gongsu had done what was in his power, but he had made quite clear one could not turn a lean, scrub-fed game animal, half bone and sinew and anatomical oddments, into a fat and nicely marbled piece of beef. Lawrence was considering if his finances could stretch to the provision of some cattle, at least for a treat.
"There is Caesar's breakfast," Temeraire said with a sigh,
as the mournful lowing of a cow came towards them from the bottom of the hill. But when it was brought up by an only slightly less reluctant youth, he delivered it not to Caesar, but to them, stammering compliments of Mr. MacArthur, and for Lawrence there was an invitation card asking him to supper.
"I wonder he should make such a gesture,"
Lawrence said, rather taken aback. One thing for MacArthur to bring himself to the covert, however irregularly organized, still in the nature of an official outpost, and quite another to invite Lawrence to his home, in mixed company, likely overseen by his wife.
"I wonder at it indeed. Unless," he added low, "he has had some intelligence of Rankin's interest in Bly's case. That might make sufficient motive even for this."
Temeraire said indistinctly, nibbling around a substantial thigh-bone. His attention was fixed, notably on Gongsu's enthusiastic preparations. The cow had been butchered and was going into the earth with what greenstuffs had passed muster and some cracked wheat. Even Caesar had peeled open an eye and was looking over with covert interest. The hour was fixed sufficiently late they could wait until the heat of the day had passed and travel at the beginning of twilight. Temeraire, having made a splendid meal, carried Lawrence aloft into the softening but yet unbroken blue. No clouds yet again all the day. What would have made an hour's journey on horse, across rough country, was an easy 10 minutes' flight, dragging back. And there was a wide fallow field open near the house, where Temeraire could set down.
"Pray thank him for my cow," Temeraire said, contentedly settling himself to nap. "It was very handsome of him, and I do not think he is a coward any more, after all."
Lawrence crossed the field to the house and paused to knock the dirt from his boots before he stepped into the lane. He had worn trousers and hessians more suitable to flying, but in concession to the invitation he had made an effort with his cravat and put on his better coat. A groom came out and looked about confused for Lawrence's horse before pointing him to the door. The house was comfortable but not especially grand, built practically and made for work. But there was an elegance and taste in the arrangements. He was shown into the salon, and a company heavily slanted. Only 4 women to 7 men, most of those in officers' uniforms. One of the women rose as Mr. MacArthur came to join him, and he presented her to Lawrence as his wife, Elizabeth. "I hope you will forgive the informality of our society, Mr. Lawrence," she said when he had bowed over her hand. "We are grown sadly careless in this wild country, and the heat crushes all aspirations to stiffness. I hope you did not have a very tiring ride."
"Not at all. Temeraire brought me," Lawrence said. "He is in your southwest field. I trust it no inconvenience."
"Why, none," she said, though her eyes had widened, and one of the officers said, "Do you mean you have that monster sitting out in the yard?"
"That monster's sharpest weapon is his tongue," MacArthur said. "I am pretty well cut to ribbons yet. Did the cow sweeten him at all?"
"As much as you might like, sir," Lawrence said dryly. "You have quite hit on the point of weakness."
The supper was, for all the ulterior motives likely to have been its inspiration, a comfortable and civilized affair. Lawrence had not quite known what to expect from the colonial society, but Mrs. MacArthur was plainly a woman of some character, and though indeed never striving for a formality which both the climate and the situation of the colony would have rendered tiresome and a little absurd, she directed the style of their gathering nevertheless. She could not have a balanced table, so she served the meal in two courses, inviting her guests to refresh themselves in between with a little walking in the gardens, illuminated with lamps, and rearranging the seating on their return to partner the ladies afresh. The meal was thoughtfully suited to the weather as well, a cool soup of fresh cucumber and mint, meat served in jellied aspic, beef very thinly carved from the joint, lightly boiled chicken, and instead of pudding, an array of cakes, with pots of jam, and excellent, fragrant tea. All served on porcelain of the very highest quality, the one real extravagance, Lawrence remarked. Dishes of white and that particularly delicate shade of blue which could not be achieved by any European art, and the strength of real quality. He noticed it to his hostess with compliments. To his surprise, she looked a little crestfallen and said, "Oh, you have found out my weakness, Mr. Lawrence. I could not resist them, although I know very well I oughtn't. They must be smuggled, of course."
"Do not say it aloud," MacArthur cried. "So long as you do not know it for certain, you may have your dishes, and we are tea. And long may the rascals thrive."
One of the many charges Bligh had laid at the rebels' door had been the practice of smuggling. The back alleys and trading houses of Sydney were flooded with goods from China, which, from the price alone, one could tell, had evaded the East India Company's monopoly on such trade.
"And I expect he would blame us for the drought, too, if he heard me say I thought the weather would hold clear another month," MacArthur said, offering a glass of port when the ladies had left them. "I don't say we have never brought in some goods which a governor might not approve of," he continued, "but I am speaking of rum, which we must have. You cannot get a man to work here except you fill his glass, and with more than you can pour at 5 shillings the bottle. A damn folly, too. A pickled liver cannot tell good, dark West Indian rum from the Bengali stuff, but we cannot even bring in that now. There is not a smell of any kind of goods from Africa since the Cape was lost. As for the China goods, my God, if I could make a profit selling Chinaware at £2 a box in Sydney, with all the cost and risk of freight, I would be packing it on ships for England instead and die rich as Croesus. There are fellows making a pretty penny selling it on, I believe, even when they can only buy it one box at a time."
There was a general murmur of agreement, and some anecdotes of trading agreements followed. It seemed to Lawrence the officers all were tradesmen also, in some measure, and the tradesmen all former officers, and many of them landed as well. They made no distinction amongst themselves, and perhaps could not have, if there were not men of business enough established in the colony to provide opportunities for investment, or their rough-and-tumble fortunes not yet sufficiently realized in coin to take advantage of them. MacArthur drew him aside as the cigars were offered around and lit, and to the open doors looking into the gardens. Squeaking small bats were flying now in clouds around the trees where earlier they had slept, hanging.
"I am grateful to you for coming," he said. "We gave you little enough reason to do so."
"You are a good host, sir," Lawrence said, "and it is a welcome I had not looked for.
Governor Bligh would call me a traitor, so far as that goes.
Has done oft enough, I imagine," MacArthur said, "and would hang me for it, too. I will not pretend, sir, to be anything less than deeply interested under the circumstances. I said to you, I believe, that I am ready to stand judgment for my acts, and so I am. But I don't care to be marched to the scaffold before it is handed down."
Lawrence looked out at the gardens a little grimly, wilting in the heat and yet still restful to look upon, neatly arranged, and beyond them, the wide, spreading fields. He was conscious that MacArthur's establishment made a powerful argument in support of his claim to have made something of himself, and in an isolate and difficult country to have carried forward the banner of civilization, uniting all the taste and respectability which was absent from the sad and rackety condition of the town. So long from England, and longer yet from any respectability, Lawrence could feel the force of that argument all the more strongly.
"Sir," he answered, "I can well understand your desire, but forgive me, I will not commit myself, and moreover, temeraire, to any course of action in advance.
I have a reputation which may make me seem more a friend to rebellion than I am by any willing choice, and for that part my assistance might not be an unmitigated boon to you, if you had it.
And if you will allow me to be blunt, MacArthur said, for your part you would be in a pretty position standing in the way of seeing Governor Bligh restored, if a frigate should come in a couple of weeks, declare us the worst unhanged scoundrels south of the line, and the Governor to be put back into place at gunpoint. No, sir, I do not ask any man, so unconnected to me as you are, to put his neck on the chopping block with mine. But if you are amenable enough to listen, I had rather propose to you a means of evading the issue entirely.
He drew Lawrence into his study, and on the desk drew out the maps of the colony and the Penning mountain range about it, a great labyrinthine mass of gorges and peaks only vaguely sketched.
All our purposes can march together, MacArthur said. You wish to be well out of the affair? Just so. I wish you out of it also, and every other dragon in the place with you, at least long enough for our doom to arrive. It cannot be long now, when the last frigate brought the post only a month behind our news.
His proposal was an expedition whose purpose should be to find a crossing over the Blue Mountains, and establish a cattle-drive road from the colony to the open territory beyond.
Where? He continued. You may set up this covert your beasts will require, and take yourselves all the land you might like. I cannot see how anyone can complain when you have opened the passage yourselves.
Captain Granby is senior, I think, he added, and can, I suppose, order this Captain Rankin on such a mission. If this new creature means to go on eating as he has begun, it seems to me you had all better be thinking of how to feed him, particularly as you have two more hatchlings to come.